And I got something to tell you, and I don't think that you'll like it very much. It's that I can't stop looking up.
Conspirators, Gardner Goldsmith here with you. Quick introduction with music provided by Stoom, the Irish band, which broke up a number of years ago. Lead singer from this band actually moved to Boston. So this is a little indication that this podcast, as the past two have been dedicated, will be dedicated to a conversation about the events in Boston, the bombing at the Boston Marathon, the police failure prior to it, and the police response and public response after the fact. This is taken from a radio program that I thought was very valuable, and it includes some great insight from one of our fellow conspirators coming to us via Skype. It's Tyron Price. I kept mispronouncing his name, but I hope you like this song. I hope you like this program. I hope you'll visit our website. Be seen. Welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Gardner Goldsmith here with you, and it's good to know that there are folks who are interested in freedom out there. In the midst of commenting and hopefully exploring further the questions that are raised by not only the actions or inactions, the inability of the police to protect people before and during a bombing incident, such as what happened at the Boston Marathon on Boylston Street in Boston on April 15th, but also after the fact, whether those who believe in individual freedom can argue that there would be a better way, even as we know that there were a lot of people who were panicking, there were a lot of people who were frustrated, and the police had about 2,000 officers and or soldiers combing the area of Watertown and Cambridge. And the entire city of Boston was shut down, virtually no commerce, except for one business, which was allowed to stay open. And that was Dunkin' Donuts. No joke, everybody knows about it, you know, and so on. But rather than looking at the farcical side of it, let's look at what that actually tells us about how safe they thought the streets were, or how unsafe they were, or how manageable they thought the streets were, and whether or not it would have been better to have had armed civilians out there with eyes on the ground to see people, because, as we have discovered, the younger of the bombers, that's, what's his name, Zokar Tsarnaev, he was spotted by a civilian who ventured out of his house and looked in his yard. Not supposed to do that. So at that point, the police had not even captured him. They didn't know, weren't sure. And if that kid had gotten into the Charles River, because Watertown, if you're not familiar, Watertown's, it's on the Charles River. If he had gotten into the river during the night, he would have been gone. Forget it. Not a chance. Now, it's possible they had heat sensors and things like that. The water was fairly cold, but he would have made it out. I am 100% sure. So, where do things stand now? And then I want to go back to this Slate story, because I want to continue studying the Fourth Amendment. And right now, there's a story that has been published by the mirror.co.uk that the FBI is reporting that they're looking for a 12-strong terrorist sleeper cell linked to brothers Tamerlan and Zokar Tsarnaev. Police believe the pair were specially trained to carry out the devastating attack. Well, what strikes me as odd is this. The FBI, as has been confirmed, already started watching these guys 4 or 5 years ago. Their parents knew about it. They had been visited by the FBI. Then the brothers went to Russia. The FBI also knew about a couple of the 9/11 hijackers. And as the New York Times has reported in great detail, the FBI was intimately aware of what the 1993 bombers were trying to do to the World Trade Center, and they were ready to get different types of explosives in there, somehow work them in there, and a decision was made, don't do that. Now, you can say, oh, it's a part of some plot or whatever, or you can say it's just stupidity. As a guy who doesn't really look into the conspiracy theories all that much, who rather looks at the nature of the government beast and the way that it operates and the way that people feed off of it, special interests feed off of it, the way human psychology works towards the center, the way television tends to aggrandize the politicians and not question them because then they won't get access, versus markets, which are competitive all the time, trying to serve the consumer best and don't force people to pay for them and have to pay for their advertising. And if they start to manipulate things on television, they can be revealed and you don't have to buy their product. Well, you know, I look at that and I say, either way, they haven't stopped this. The increase of the police state, as we talked about in an equation, you know, X plus Y that the state could do to lead to a safer society on the other side of the equal sign. They've increased the police state how many multiple fold? And they have not provided any more safety. They haven't stopped one independent terrorist act. There have been three that the FBI basically formulated and suckered guys to get involved with, one in Chicago, one in Florida, one in New York. But that's it. All the others were either foiled by civilians or they weren't foiled at all, like this one. Or they people screwed up. You know, the bombers screwed up. So, right now the FBI is claiming that they're hunting a 12-strong terrorist sleeper cell linked to the Boston Marathon bomb brothers. Police believe Tamerlan and Zokar Tsarnaev were specially trained to carry out the devastating attack. More than 1,000 FBI operatives were last night working to track down the cell and arrested a man and two women 60 miles from Boston in the hours before Zokar's dramatic capture after a bloody shootout on Friday. A source close to the investigation said, "We have no doubt the brothers were not acting alone. The devices used to detonate the two bombs were highly sophisticated and not the kind of thing people learn from Google." Jeez. They were too advanced. Someone gave the brothers the skills, and it is now our job to find out just who they were. Agents think the sleeper cell has up to a dozen members and has been waiting several years for their day to come. A specialist team of CIA and FBI. Now, what I don't understand is this. Why did the FBI, and I'll go back to the Slate thing in a minute, but why did the FBI release the pictures of the guys and say, we're not sure, plus a bunch of others, and say, we're not sure, when they already had those guys on a watch list? How come citizens like you and I can fear for being put on a no-fly list against the Constitution, and yet somehow the FBI missed that these guys went to Russia? What were they doing in Russia? Well, these guys are Chechen. Are they upset? Well, they seem to be upset about U.S. policy regarding the Middle East and Islam. What have we been saying over and over and over again? So they've increased the police state. They haven't gotten the results. And as we said last Monday, what other factors could they possibly change in the state paradigm? Maybe actually acknowledge what seems to be pissing people off and engaging them to begin plotting to kill American civilians. Just as the Times Square bomber said, if the United States continues to do what it is doing in the Middle East, more American civilians will die. I am quoting him verbatim. So, I mean, how much more obvious does it have to get? Now, people could say, well, you know, Bostonians are so proud of their police. Look at what they did. They finally captured this guy with the help of a civilian who wasn't even supposed to be in his house because the police had ordered everybody to be in their houses. He was supposed to be outside of his house. But he ventured out a little bit and saw this guy in the boat, right? Okay. Now, everybody seems so proud of the police. Police were in a dangerous situation. They were in gunfights. I wouldn't want to have been a cop in that situation. But the cops are there to serve a purpose, supposedly. And they supposedly swear an oath to uphold something, the U.S. Constitution. So how do we weigh the panic, the fear, the feelings of these people in applauding the police after the fact? We know that the police failed before the fact, but then how do we as people who believe in freedom look at the response of the citizens, the civilians, after the fact? Did the police do a good job? If there were a private paradigm, would the police force that's hired by private agencies, by individuals, do similar things? Would they allow people on the streets? How would that sort of work? So we'll investigate that. We're going to talk about the Fourth Amendment. It's very important. Then next hour, we'll be joined by Soph in a recorded conversation for about 25, 30 minutes. We'll hear Sophia's perspective, too. So, and I'll open up the Skype line, too. It's GARDNER.Goldsmith on Skype.
Let the man go through. Move aside.
using technology to fight for freedom, spread the word about thinking about history, economics, individual sovereignty, and individual control over one's own actions. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. This is Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. Find our website at libertyconspiracy.com. Skype me at Gardner, G-A-R-D-N-E-R dot Goldsmith. Skype lines open now, and next hour we'll be joined by Soph from the UK with Soph's thoughts on the Boston Marathon bombing, on the search for the suspects, and on the rights that seem to have been tossed out the window. The United States government, the United States populace seems to have turned a page here and gone into the realms of some pretty bad ideas. And but that is the perspective of a person who believes in freedom and would like to remind people about the U.S. Constitution and the Fourth Amendment, and then maybe draw out a lesson by that, from that, to say that maybe you shouldn't count on the Constitution to protect you, because there are writers, such as the one for Slate Online magazine, like Katie Waldman, who on Friday, April 19th, as they wrapped up the manhunt for the youngest brother of the bombing suspects, said that, well, under exigent circumstances, the police certainly can invade someone's home. So let's talk about that. Now it's time for us to analyze the after the bombing actions. The psychology of folks who live in an area where there's an armed person, the fear of people. How do we as freedom lovers look at that with hopefully an understanding or at least compassion towards the feelings of those people in that area, when we see later people waving the American flag saying Boston strong, when everyone was inside their homes under order of the police, essentially under lockdown, when many of those people who could have been out on the streets to look for the guy weren't out on the streets, where if they had gone out on the streets and if they had at all dared to exercise their right to self-protection by brandishing a firearm, they would have been dead or close to it. So how do we look at this? Well, one thing we can do is remind people about a couple things, because they're going to be told some things over and over and over until the great lie is accepted. So we've got to fight against it. We are a conspiracy for freedom. As the great writer for Slate writes, well, is it legal for the police to search your house without a warrant? It can be. Under the Fourth Amendment, a judge issues a warrant if police can demonstrate that a search is, quote, reasonable, that there is, quote, probable cause to investigate a house, car, or backyard for evidence. But there are plenty of circumstances under which police can perform searches without invoking probable cause. Interesting. Did you notice something there, as I started to point out a little earlier in the show? You see, right now the accepted norm is that the police themselves can themselves invoke probable cause. You see what she did here? She conflated the two. Under the Fourth Amendment, a judge issues a warrant if police can demonstrate that a search is reasonable, that there is a probable cause to investigate a house, car, or backyard for evidence. So, she acknowledges the actual wording of the Constitution, which says that a judge must issue a warrant on the judge's determination of probable cause. But then she twists it, she conflates it, and she removes something. She says there are plenty of circumstances under which police can perform searches without invoking probable cause. So what she's doing here is saying that you can assume that the police themselves can invoke probable cause. She sort of glibly moves over from the actual meaning of the Constitution, where a judge has got to be the one that determines probable cause, and goes into this sort of acceptance, this rhetorical, verbal, legerdemain, where she can get you to think, oh, yes, it's the police who can invoke probable cause. No, it's not the police who can invoke probable cause. And then she just puts that down as the assumption. Then she says, and sometimes even the police don't have to invoke probable cause. So what she's doing is she's getting people to accept the idea that the police themselves can invoke probable cause by saying, by her saying, that sometimes they don't even have to invoke probable cause, when it is not the police who have to invoke probable cause. The police cannot act for the state unless a judge invokes probable cause and issues a warrant so that the police can then do the search. That's the way it has to work. Just in, let me see, that was two sentences. You see how this sort of stuff can be manipulated to get people to accept this. She says, if you consent to a police search, officers do not need a warrant to enter your home. Duh. If you have a housemate, he or she can allow the police to rummage through common areas, such as the living room or the kitchen, but not private areas, such as your closet or bedroom. But then she gets to the real nut of it. In exigent circumstances or emergency situations, police can conduct warrantless searches to protect public safety. Really? They can? This exception to the Fourth Amendment's probable cause requirement normally addresses situations of hot pursuit in which an escaping suspect is tracked to a private home. But it might also apply to the events unfolding in Boston if further harm or injury might be supposed to occur in the time it takes to secure a warrant. A bomber believed to be armed and planning more violence would almost certainly meet such prerequisites. Now, you see, this is all thinking that's been built up like tarnish, like crap on the field that the founders put together. Believe me, I'm not a huge fan of the Constitution anymore. I was when I was a teenager, maybe my early 20s. But since then, I realize how unworkable the Constitution is, how many holes it has in it, and how it really, really was quite a usurpation from the Articles of Confederation. How Rhode Island was basically pressured, the legislature of Rhode Island was pressured with a threat of an embargo to accept the Constitution. How most of the people involved with the Revolutionary War in the United States did not attend the Constitutional Convention out of protest. And how the big centralizing figures like Alexander Hamilton were the big movers in there. They wanted to get money and big projects to their friends in banking and manufacturing and things like that. Okay, so I didn't know when she says in exigent circumstances or emergency situations, police can conduct warrantless searches to protect public safety. This exception to the Fourth Amendment's probable cause requirement normally addresses situations of hot pursuit. Really, I didn't know that the wording of the Fourth Amendment said essentially that a judge shall issue a warrant on his determination of probable cause unless there are exigent circumstances, that even though this is a provision to protect individuals' safety and privacy and private belongings and property from the government, anytime the government determines that there are exigent circumstances, the government can then go in and go completely against what has been written in the Fourth Amendment. It makes the Fourth Amendment completely useless. This whole thing is a farce. Exigent circumstances, there's no such thing in the Fourth Amendment. It's not there. It doesn't exist. It is based on judicial precedent. So, Tea Partiers, do you really think you want to continue to rely on the government to make rulings about whether the government is abiding by the government's rules? Because so far, they haven't done a real stellar job. You've got the exigent circumstances idea that judges have thrust out there. Exigent circumstances. Now, if a person was panicked in Boston and said, you know, guard, I understand what you're saying, but I'm glad they did that. I have a friend who's a left-wing friend. He said, you know, sometimes Big Brother is good to have around. Well, if you think so, you can amend the Constitution. If you were that worried and you think, hey, man, you're not on the right footing here, guard. This is a good thing that these police were there. Well, if you think it was good, then have them go about it legally and amend the Constitution to allow for exigent circumstances. Just do it. We'll return. Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Big thanks to Tarrant Price for joining us. Good to talk to him. Really enjoyed having his perspective. Great freedom fighter. And I hope to get him on soon. We talked about the Boston Marathon bombing, the pursuit, mostly the pursuit and the reaction of some of the people in Boston to the apprehension of the second suspect. Okay, go to libertyconspiracy.com if you want to find our latest podcast, which is available. Each podcast, usually within a couple days, I guess we get usually 1,000 downloads within a couple days. I haven't looked, but but it's usually about 500 a day, which is great. And thank you so much for checking out what we offer at Podomatic and at iTunes. If you want to get some Liberty Conspiracy merchandise or whatever, I don't see a dime of it. It says I'm supposed to get 15%, but I haven't seen anything, and I don't really care. It doesn't matter. The girl designed these things. It did a great job, and she deserves to get everything she wants to get out of it. If she can get stuff, I don't even know how much she keeps track of it. But they're at armorforactivists.com, and you can see the Liberty Conspiracy link. I got to pick up some more stuff because I'm going to give some away as gifts. Okay, I want to continue talking about the Boston Marathon bombing, the suspects, the pursuit, and again, want to discuss this within the context of an awareness of the fear that some people would feel, the way that the city was shut down, except for certain areas of the city where the police deemed it was all right. The supposed voluntary side of the shutdown, which wasn't really voluntary because people were arrested, people were detained if they strayed out of their homes. They had weapons pointed at them. And how we as libertarians might approach this and say, okay, would a private paradigm work in the same way? Would people accept cops coming into their homes? How would it be worked out in a voluntarist society? And the way, if you're not familiar with voluntarism, most of it pertains to the idea of being able to enter into a society voluntarily for whatever you might think you might want to agree on. Maybe you'll have no police protection. Maybe you will have police protection. Maybe certain streets will hire certain... Everything would be private. And would you be in a certain area, living in a certain area, without certain agreements with the companies behind it, adjudication services, and would they have reciprocity with other private areas? A lot of it would have to do with insurance companies. Most of it would have to do with indemnification, so that if you had a safe record, you could stay there without more expense. If you didn't have a safe record, it would cost you more. Police services would be competitive, and they would cater better to the interests of the people who live there. So maybe it's possible that the people who live there would say, yes, you can enter my home at any time. Maybe they wouldn't want that. It would be voluntarily achieved. Liked it, they could stay. If they didn't like it, they could leave. Right now, you don't really have that possibility. Now, people could say, oh, would a private system eventually devolve into a government-like thing? Well, maybe, but I don't think so. What's interesting is the police forces that didn't do good jobs, that failed at protecting people, like the U.S. police forces, the state police forces, and so on, that have failed to stop any terrorist act and have probably inspired even more terrorism. In fact, the terrorists have actually said this is why, because of U.S. foreign policy. So the actions we know the terrorists have acknowledged have inspired them to kill U.S. civilians. Okay? The term blowback, when used by Ron Paul, was poo-pooed by the Republican neocon hierarchy. But Ron Paul was right. And we've been saying the same thing. We weren't led there by Ron Paul. We've been saying these sorts of things all along. So would police forces that were screwing up inside your town, maybe they weren't protecting you right, would they exist for long? No, they wouldn't exist for long. You would get a response that would more closely match the interests of the people who hired the companies, just like a private school, just like a restaurant that caters to your interests and survives or falls, stand or fall, as the fix might have said, based on how well they satisfy the customer. What would you do if you had only government-run restaurants? What kind of responsiveness do you think you would get to the provision of a very important thing, food, government supermarkets? Do you want government supermarkets? What kind of choices are you going to get? Do you have allergies? Are you in a minority? Who's going to get catered to the most? Right? A lot of different factors there than in the free marketplace where the government, if you can get the government out of it, doesn't get involved. So when we look at what happened in Watertown, we keep these things in mind. Now, I may or may not have time to even propose what I think might happen in a Watertown situation, in a Cambridge situation, where, and I've walked around those streets. I know those areas very well. I know that that kid could have gotten away. But a civilian spotted him. And yet, the people in Boston watched the police, they watched all the forces, they watched the people turn to the governor and the mayor and all those people who failed to protect them in the first place and said, thank God they were there. Now, maybe those police officers were doing a good job. And that's not all the people. Not all of them were applauding. There's some video of people, and I'll make a separate podcast out of it. I can't play it for you right now. There's some people who took video saying, yeah, I woke up to this. Cops are walking through my garage. Guys walking around with M16s. Like, oh, that's great. People being escorted out of their houses, being yelled at if they don't put their hands up over their heads. Hey, those cops are nervous. They don't want to get shot at. It's a crazy situation. It's absolutely out of control. They get killed at any time. Cop was killed earlier that night, allegedly by one of those guys. So I can't say, oh, a private force would do much better. But what we can do is point out the rules those guys are supposed to follow and say, look, people seem very willing to if they're aware of these rules, to overlook the rules. And I think most of the people down there don't even know about the rules. So really, it's sort of a lawless state where people rely on what they think are their protectors, the police. And if anybody had gone out and actually, in an abstract way, tried to prove that rights exist, the right to keep and bear arms, forget it. You're done. Practically speaking, it's over in Massachusetts and most big cities. It's done. You're going to have to get away. And even if you do, go to a place like Ruby Ridge, see what happens. You know, your son will get shot in the back and your wife will get shot in the head by the FBI. Lon Harucci, the great hero of Ruby Ridge, who killed an unarmed woman holding her baby in the doorway. So, thanks to Taryn for joining us. Thanks to Slate for reminding us that what seems to be a growing number of people seem to think that the Constitution certainly allows for exigent circumstances without any amendment. The state can decide what the exigent circumstances are. Hello, we're coming in. Enjoy. And then you can parade down the streets and say, we did it, we did it, woo! Yeah. Boston's strong, really? While you are hiding in your home and your rights are being trampled.
Monkey Street! planet of the apes.
Skype, it's GARDNER.Goldsmith on Skype. Big thanks again to Taryn Price for talking to us from many miles away via Skype. Wherever you are, you can contact me. It's Gardner.Goldsmith on Skype. Now, before I go to our conversation with Soph, I want to go now to a website, which is GeorgeDonnelly.com. And he has a piece, which I think is a pretty darn good piece. I'd like to mention it to you. It's George Donnelly's Arm Your Mind for Liberty, Provocative Libertarian Ideas for a Freer Life Now. And the headline is, Boston Tried a Police State and It Failed. April 20th, he dates this. Yesterday, a major U.S. city, perhaps as many as 1 million people, was put under martial law. Business and universities were closed. Public transit and Amtrak were padlocked. Paramilitary cops from multiple states rolled down Boston's residential neighborhoods. Yes, they came from New Hampshire, by the way. And again, if we're talking about the state in its generic form, then at what point is reciprocity definitely required? How do you handle these sorts of things? What if you're not satisfied? Can you withhold your money? What if you want more? Can you withhold your money and say, I want more, or I'm going to go to someplace else, get a different company? No. Mm-mm. Public transit, Amtrak, padlock, paramilitary cops from multiple states rolled down Boston's residential neighborhoods in Humvees with manned machine gun turrets on top. In full battle gear, these guys, they looked like soldiers, called people out of their homes. They then searched the homes. Boston became a ghost town and a police state for a day, and Bostonians cheered them for it. Some even called for a parade to honor the men who treated them like prisoners in their own homes. This grand show of force, which even the FBI admits is unprecedented, was carried out for the purpose of catching a suspected terrorist, a 19-year-old honor student who stands accused of deploying pressure cooker bombs at the Boston Marathon. These bombs reportedly killed 3 and injured 170. They're also accused of killing an MIT police officer. Well, what are the lessons? What does this mean? I'm going to go to number two. The demand for tyranny is too damned high, he writes. This is GeorgeDonnelly.com. People will put up with a lot, really a lot, in the name of safety. One, turn the city into a war zone with soldiers and Humvees? Sure. Two, lock down my proud city as if it were a prison? No problem. Three, house-to-house searches without legal basis? It's okay. Four, snipers aiming at me and my family while I wait on the sidewalk for my house to be searched? Yep, it's legit. Five, cheer the guys doing all this. Let them high-five my kid. Suggest throwing a parade for them? Yep, it all happened. It was like the TSA came out to your house for the day and you were thrilled by it. The ability of the U.S. population to cheerfully accept tyranny is nothing short of amazing. If this doesn't rouse people from their slumber, then anything that will rouse them is going to be too late. Second point he makes, actually this is number three. The U.S. is shockingly weak. It was just a 19-year-old kid with pressure cookers and guns. He didn't even have fully automatic weapons. Yet everyone was so scared that they willingly cowered in their homes and complied with every request made of them. Imagine if this kid actually knew what he was doing. Imagine if there were a dozen of these guys in multiple parts of the city or multiple parts of the country operating simultaneously. They could have brought the whole country to a standstill. I thought America was a great country, a powerful country. I thought it was the best country in the world. That's what they tell me, at least. Is this the country that defeated Hitler in World War II? Is this the country that put a man on the moon? If these events are meaningful to you, then you need to question what the hell happened. You can defeat Hitler in Tojo. You can hang Saddam and assassinate bin Laden, but you cower in fear of a 19-year-old kid? The proper reaction to a criminal, and let's remember that the surviving Tsarnaev brother hasn't been convicted yet, is to boldly but tacitly proceed forward against him until he is neutralized. Human life is precious. All life is precious, in fact. It demands protection. But there is something more important to me than my life, my self-respect. My self-respect demands that I not allow another person to control me through fear. It demands that I have courage. It demands that I resist evil. We all feel fear. When there is a gun to your head, you have no choice but to comply. But we must not allow the fear to control us. We must not allow the gun, or the pressure cooker in this case, to become internalized and control us even when it is physically absent. Otherwise, any old boogeyman can and will come along and enslave us. Should people have cooperated? When a dozen paramilitary cops with fully automatic battle rifles, backed by a guy on a Humvee turret and snipers, come to my house, the words voluntary and cooperation have no place. I would be a fool to resist. They have guns to my head and the heads of everyone with me. It's now too late to resist. I don't blame anyone for cooperating. I blame them for cheering their oppressors. Now, again, what can we say as people who say there could have been a private police force that had this sort of situation thrown at them, right? Well, I think the private police forces would probably respond as quickly or more quickly. They would also not be funding, the citizens would likely not be funding international acts that are inspiring terrorists and allowing people to recruit other people into their terrorist activities to kill American civilians out of protest of the very actions of the civilians' government, right? Now, that's very abstract to a lot of people who hear this, and they know the people who got hurt, they know people who got killed, they might live in an area and say, you weren't there, you don't know. So if we had a private police force, would they have been allowed to walk in? Maybe. It would be up to you. Would people be cheering them? Maybe. Would they have allowed people to go on the streets to say, you know what? It might be safer to have armed civilians on the streets. We know what this guy looks like. We know what the armed civilians are like. So we're going to have to search it. Or would that have been too difficult? Would there have been too many people on the streets? How do you manage these sorts of things? It's sort of a continuum. And at what point does it become impossible to deal with? Right? So in this case, maybe the police are very heroic, going out there at night, all night long. But by the same token, we need to acknowledge that there are certain rules that have gone out the window. And these rules are extremely important. These rules are the rules that supposedly establish these police forces. They allow for the existence of the police forces under certain stipulations. One is, you can't pull people out of their houses at gunpoint and then walk into their houses. You have to have a judge sign a warrant. You can't shut down businesses. You can't stop people from walking down the street. You can't stop journalists from going to get their battery packs in order to cover what you're doing. You can't stop people from speaking to you while you're trying to do your job. All of these things have been built up. Disorderly conduct. Oh, okay. I'm in jail now. I just read a story about Reese Witherspoon and her husband getting pulled over for driving while intoxicated while she was in the car. And she did not angrily yell or anything like that. She said, hey, she got out of the car to try to see what was going on as they did the test on him. She didn't get that close. Guy orders her back into the car. She says, I have a right to stand here. Boom, disorderly conduct.